welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC here on ESPN Plus. What we lack in quality today, we're going to make up with quantity. So much going on. We've got the second part of that interview with Alphonso Davies, Craig Burley, Ali Moreno, Sid Lowe, Frank LaBeouf, and Julien Laurent all with us. But let's start, shall we, as we always do, updating you with how the coronavirus is affecting football around the globe. Some interesting stuff today from the Bundesliga in an interview with the New York Times. Talking about return dates, they mentioned, of course, that all Bundesliga clubs have returned to training. The Bundesliga plans to resume season in early May behind closed doors and finish it before June the 30th. Bundesliga expects no fans until next year. Meanwhile, the Eredivisie plans to resume season on June the 19th, and that will finish up by the end of July. Meanwhile, Jose Mourinho was caught flouting government guidelines by training some of the Spurs players yesterday, including Ndombele. He has since apologised, issuing this statement saying, "I accept that my actions were not in line with government protocol and we must only have contact with members of our own household. It's vital we all play our part, follow government advice in order to support our heroes in the NHS and save lives." Well, let's welcome Craig Burley and Julien Laurent to the show. Craig, what do you make of this?
Well, if it's vital to follow government policy, why didn't he follow government policy? The Prime Minister of the UK, as we speak, is actually in hospital in a pretty serious condition. He has been for at least 2 or 3 days. If that's not warning enough that this virus doesn't recognise any individual, it is out there and you need to adhere to those guidelines, then clearly nothing else will register. Look, if you'd watched Ndombele this season, would you say, does this player need some extra training? Absolutely, he needs some extra training. He's looked that way from the start of the season. But this is not the time and the place. There are clear guidelines. There are some people who are not adhering to it. But unfortunately, when it's a very public person like Jose Mourinho, that's not going to make the matter any better for Joe Public in the street to try and stay inside, stay away from other people and keep your social distancing. It's irresponsible at the very best.
Jules, you could have had 20 guesses of which Spurs player he would have been caught with. Ndombele would be very much down the bottom of that list, considering the criticism the Frenchman has received of late.
Yes, you're right. That's the I guess the positive for Spurs is that Mourinho and Ndombele are friends again now. Clearly, for Mourinho to break the government guidelines to go and have an individual training session, because as I was told today by someone at the club, the others that got caught running and not being social distancing, Sanchez and Cessegnon on one hand and Serge Aurier and one of his friends on the other hand, were not part of that session. That session was only Mourinho and Ndombele. The club knew nothing about it. It was arranged by Mourinho himself to sort of maybe rekindle their relationship in a way, as you said, very much broken since Mourinho took over from Mauricio Pochettino in November. But at least that was the positive. The negative is pretty much everything that Craig just explained.
Craig, how did he think he was going to get away with this?
I don't know. I mean, at least he might have went out and bought a false nose and a moustache and some glasses or something. Just do anything. But, you know, so public about it. I mean, at the end of the day, if Mourinho had called me as a player and said, "We're going out training together," I would have just said no. If there's one excuse you've got for coming back slightly unfit at the moment, it is this pandemic. So, you know, clearly there are blame on both sides. It's real stupidity when you see the scenarios surrounding lots and lots. I mean, thousands of people now who are affected by this in terms of the illness itself in the UK, never mind all the economic problems going around with it. So it's just utter stupidity. But it's been nipped in the bud. And as Tottenham, I think, have said themselves, we have to make sure that our employees adhere to government policy.
Gentlemen, thank you very much. A lot more from Craig and Jules over on YouTube as they're answering your questions today on Extra Time. In case you missed yesterday's interview with Alphonso Davies, you can check that out over on our podcast from yesterday. By the way, part two is coming up. We're going to put them both together for a special podcast, so keep an eye out for that. But as promised, here is part two.
How would you rate that performance for you? You think your best one yet? Because Champions League knockout rounds, I mean, how does it rank for you?
Yeah, playing Champions League is... I don't know what to say. Champions League is different. Once you hear the anthem, it's like everything rushes to you and you just want to go out there and run for 90 minutes straight. I played really well. I did what the coaches told me to do. I did play my part, defend well, attack well. I knew that I was playing against, you know, quality players on the right, on the left side, or their right side. So I knew that I had to be, you know, on my A game, or, you know, I don't want to, anything can happen. And, you know, but yeah, I just wanted to be on my A game and perform.
And then just when you guys come back, when we finally get football again and hopefully Champions League again, with this team, do you feel like this Bayern team can definitely just win it all?
I really feel that. With the quality we have, I think we can win the Champions League each and every day. We always have that in the back of our mind. If this year can be our year to win Champions League again.
And of course, I mean, behind every good team is a pretty good leader. You do have that one in Hans-Dieter Flick. He's been made permanent. Now, how have things changed under him? What was that transition like? Or what's your favorite part working, you know, with him, favorite parts about it?
Yeah, my favorite part about him, he lets us play. He lets us, you know, be creative. Yeah, he implements his coaching tactics, how he wants us to play. But, you know, obviously win games. And that's what other players we want to do as well. And obviously enjoy playing our football. Because, you know, if you enjoy playing your football, that's how you, you know, you win games with a smile on your face.
Was making the transition from him, you know, to becoming the main man there now, was it pretty easy for you? Did it just flow?
Yeah, no, it was pretty easy. At first, I was like, maybe David doesn't want to play center back, but I asked him, like, you enjoy playing center back? He said, yeah, it's no problem. I'm like, okay. I'm going to be on the left side, you know, whenever you need your position, just let me know. And he can come. So, yeah, we make jokes like that. But, yeah, I mean, me playing left back, it was pretty easy transition, you know, considering I have, you know, one of the best left backs in the world as my center back. Mm. So a lot of advice coming my way from him.
Do you have any worries, you know, trying to get into the left back position?
No, I have no worries. When I found out that they wanted me to play me left back, it's just to learn, you know, more about the position, you know, asking questions, where I should move, where I should go. But Hansi just doesn't want me to play just strictly left back. Obviously, he wants me to, you know, I join the attack as well because he knows I'm a winger as well. So he wants me to join the attack. But obviously, defensive responsibility as a left back is the number one priority.
And then let's now just talk speed, because I know that's your baby right there. We saw the TikTok where, you know, when God was making you, he definitely filled that cup to the brim. Is that the favorite, your favorite part of your game?
Yeah, I'm happy. I'm blessed that I have speed. To be honest, I don't know where I would be without it. Maybe a center mid, but no, I can't see myself playing center mid.
And finally, just at Bayern now, I mean, obviously there's a ton of great players. We can list it off. It starts with you, yourself included too. But since you're, of course, one of the juniors there, I suppose, were you ever surprised with just how good or just how intense they were when you started training with them? You know, do you have any stories of, like you said, seeing probably Robin in action or Lewandowski and going, whoo, that man really is good?
Yeah. I do have some stories. I think my first training, it was just passing. Yeah, it wasn't too bad. But the passing, their touches, their control, everything is so on point. You have about 2 seconds to make a decision after you get the ball. So you really have to know what you're going to do with the ball or where your next pass is going to be, where your next dribble, you have to really look around. I think that's where I struggled at first. Now it's getting better and better, but obviously I still lose the ball, obviously, because I take too long on the ball. But I think at first I really struggled with that because their touches, their passing, their movement, it was so sharp that I didn't know how to act. And shooting, crossing, I crossed the ball with David Alaba at the beginning. He was just, it was so effortless to him. Crossing the ball is just so easy to him. On the other side, Rafinha as well. Just crossing the ball to these guys is just, it's like passing. It's like It's so easy. I struggled because I will hit the ball too hard because we'll be close to the 18-yard. I hit the ball too hard. And obviously I get advice. So now my crossing is better than it was before. So
now you know how to act.
Yep.
Well, Craig and Jules are back with us. Craig, how difficult is it to have done what Alphonso Davies has achieved in the fact that he's gone from what pretty much a left winger to a left back?
Yeah, and a very good one at that. One of the most attacking fullbacks in world football at the moment. And a player with just, on top of all the ability, Dan, a player with searing pace to burn, and a young guy that's only going to get better. The one thing I would say, and I'm not trying to take away from what he has done so far in his very young career, in the modern game, I think it is slightly easier to make that transition from the wide player to the fullback. Because if you look at all the top teams now, the fullbacks effectively are the wide players, so they actually are the wingers. So the one thing that, you know, for the likes of Trent Alexander-Arnolds and the Kyle Walkers and, you know, the Jordi Albas, the list goes on. The Danny Carvajal, Alphonso Davies, these guys are effectively wide players who have to do a little bit of defending now. So the one downside is when you're playing in that position, you have to work on the defensive aspect of your game. You have to work on the offside. You have to work on the tucking in, your positional sense, which is difficult and will come with time, or should come with time. What I would say, it would have been a more difficult transition, in my opinion, quite a few years ago when fullbacks actually were fullbacks and they were expected to defend and they weren't expected to go forward in the manner in which they are now. So I think the modern game is the perfect era and the perfect time for somebody like Alphonso Davies to do it. That's not to take away from the way this young man has played so far in that position, which has been tremendous.
Jules, how highly do you rate him?
Very highly, like everyone pretty much in the whole of the world. The only thing I would say, and again, it's not me criticising him or not, but let's give him a full season. We've had, 3 months of Alphonso Davies as a left-back, and yes, he's done great, but he will have tougher games than the one he's had so far. He will have tougher positions in the Champions League than the one game he had against Chelsea, for example, that was far too easy for him, and where, especially in the second half, he was outstanding. But he will, because he's not a defender naturally and by trade either, he still has a lot of things to learn in that position. His positioning, in the way he defends, his understanding with the rest of the back four, whether that's with Alaba, centre-back, or someone else there. And there's a lot of things that he will have to improve to be a top left-back. But so far, from what we've seen, he's got all the qualities for it. So it's just about him working hard, listening to a lot of advice from people like Alaba, who now plays alongside him, and keep improving. But on paper, he has everything to make a great left-back. But I think we still need to see a bit more from him before being completely convinced.
Meanwhile, we've been conducting quite a few quizzes over on our YouTube channel between pundits. The latest one saw Gab against Jules.
Who's the only country to have appeared in every single World Cup tournament, Jules?
I'm going to say... I'm going to say Uruguay.
Wrong, Brazil. Gab, 3-2 up. How many times has Holland played in a World Cup final, Gab?
1974, where they lost...
Just give the answer!
I'm not even sure. Context. All right, fine. Just quickly. All right, Philip said to you.
Jules, what happened, man?
I mean, that's so mean to pick that short clip of that answer. I overthought it. I went for Uruguay. I was under pressure. I was behind. But also, I wanted to let Gab win because, you know, we do a podcast together and it's already hard as it is because he asks questions and answers them before you can even talk. So I thought if I beat him, then he might be even more grumpy in the next podcast and I might not have anything to say at all. So I think for the peace in the world right now, it's those difficult circumstances, I just let him win and he's happy. He thought, oh, I never thought I would win. Oh, dude, blah, blah, blah. So he's happy. It's not too bad for me. People know that I know my stuff.
I couldn't concentrate either, Jules, when I just saw that piece because of that big head that was in the middle of you two. Mark Donaldson. How the hell How the hell did they manage to fit the three of his on the one screen in the three box? I mean, surely there was no room for you. Once you got Gab's head and Donaldson's head, we're lucky we even saw you in that clip. My God.
And he kept moaning because he had to wake up really early because, you know, when we taped here, it was like sort of midday for us here in London, and it was too early and the whole family was still asleep, and he was like, and yeah, he kept moaning. But what really cost me a lot is the question about Scotland, Craig, and I'm really disappointed that never in the history of the game Scotland qualified for, you know, went past the group stage in the World Cup. I thought at least your team and you as a superstar did it. So
Well, we would have done, but the World Cup I played in was in France. In 3 weeks in France, I was fed up. I wanted to get back home, so I couldn't bear any more of those frogs' legs and all that guff that you eat over there. So I just wanted to get back. By the way, have you seen Scotland recently? It won't be too long before this historic Scottish national team that is on the upset qualifying. Well, maybe we'll qualify for a major tournament first, and then we can start worrying about getting out the group stages. Yeah, that'll be a start.
You can see Gab against Jules then in its entirety, and Mark and his rather large head in the middle of them. Check it out over on our YouTube channel.
GEICO has the insurance industry leading app that lets you manage your policy anytime, anywhere. Which means that GEICO is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like animal control, when you're cornered in your garage by an angry possum.
Hi, me again. You guys said you would be here about an hour ago, and I think the possum is starting to get angry. Listen, I thought if I fed it, it would go away, but now it is ripping holes in the drywall and making some sort of nest. Just call me back.
GEICO, always there for you with savings and the industry-leading mobile app.
Foot odor throwing you off your game? Stick to a winning game plan with Odor Eaters, featuring three advanced odor and wetness fighters. The lineup provides long-lasting odor control plus more to keep your feet on their game.
Odor Eaters powder provides outstanding moisture control. Clear drying spray is the MVP in preventing athlete's foot, while insoles work continuously to manage wetness while adding a layer of comfort. Pick up today at Walmart, Target, CVS, Dollar General, or other fine retailers.
Odor Eaters. Destroy foot odor with the best in odor defense.
Bill Barnwell has announced that Thierry Henry is the number one signing in the history of the Premier League. Well, to give us their thoughts, we welcome back Craig Burling. We welcome in Frank Leboeuf as well. Craig, let's start with you. Do you concur?
Well, Bill Barnwell hasn't announced that he's the greatest. Bill Barnwell's announced that that's his opinion, that Thierry Henry is the greatest signing. Yes. So let's just get that straight. It's not set in stone. It's hard to argue, I think, really, when you see what he did when he came in from Juventus. I think it was a wide player at the time, and Arsene Wenger resurrected him as an out-and-out striker, and it is hard to argue. A couple of the guys, or certainly one of the guys that sprung to mind, was a Frenchman, not by the name of Frank Leboeuf, but by the name of Eric Cantona. When you think about, he came to Sheffield Wednesday on trial and was discarded by Howard Wilkinson, or Trevor Francis, or whoever it was, I can't remember, but he went to Leeds. I think it was Leeds under Howard Wilkinson. And then Sir Alex Ferguson took him for, I'm guessing, around £1 million. What a heck of a transfer that was. So Eric Cantona springs to mind as well.
Frank, Thierry Henry, number one, do you agree?
I can agree with that. I mean, he had such an impact when he was there. You know, not too many players have a statue in front of the stadium that the fans loved him. I played many times against him. It was quite impossible to cope with his power, his technique, and his pace. It's true that Cantona could have been named as well. It's maybe too many French people to be named. But many others could have been, and because we see so many fantastic players. But I don't agree. I checked the list. First, I'm not there, so I'm very upset with that. I'm very upset with the fact that Roberto Di Matteo is not there. Roberto Di Matteo won five cups with Chelsea, scored two important goals for the club in the FA Cup. How he cannot be there? When I see players being there with barely one trophy or maybe none, so that's very questionable. But for the first one, I'm okay.
Hey, you could throw in Gianfranco Zola as well, because at 5.5 million, I believe it was, Frank, or thereabouts, that's an absolute steal. I mean, my God, 5 million for a little genius like that is quite incredible. And out with the Premier League, and this kind of annoys me because we can't go there. How about this one? If he'd just been south of the border, Dan, Henrik Larsson from Feyenoord to Celtic, £675,000. If that had been in England, he'd have been top of Bill Barnwell's list. He's got to be £675,000. Think about that. In 1997, not too different a time to when Thierry Henry signed for Arsenal. That has to be the bargain of the century. But guess what? He's not in the Premier League. So in most people's mind, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. It's just disregarded because it's little old Scotland.
Craig, can you tell me the Henrik Larsson training story, please? It's one of my favourites.
Which one?
Where a teammate, I believe, was quite aggressive with him.
Well, I'm not going to mention my teammate at the time's name, but Henrik, we were during one of our feisty training sessions, very early on, I think, in Henrik's arrival, and he signed the same time as me, same time as sort of Matt Reaper arrived. There was a Stefan Mahe from France. Frank and I talked about that the other day. There was a whole host of players come in, Reggie Blinker, one of them being Henrik Larsson. And things got a little bit tetchy during a training session, and these two players were on the ground, one of them being Henrik and one of them being a Scottish player. And the Scottish player, as they both went to get up, thought Henrik was going to go for him and gave Henrik what we know in Scotland as a Glasgow kiss, which is, bang, the old headbutt. Now, I don't like to say that, I have to say, but it caught Henrik flush on the nose and the blood's all coming out, it's gushing. And of course, what always happens, there was some young Glaswegian boys all watching the training session before Henrik even got back to Celtic Park to get it repaired. It was on the radio. So the news had broke. Oh, and guess what? Guess what? It was only 3 days before a Rangers-Celtic game. As if things weren't going to be hyped up enough, we've now got our star man who's just been headbutted by another player. The whole thing was a mess. And by the way, Dan, I have to say, Henrik's two black eyes were an absolute peach. I mean, you couldn't hide these things. It was just two horrendous black eyes. So, yeah. But I have to say, everybody got on great after that. It was an unfortunate incident. These things happen at clubs sometimes. We hope they don't. But it did. And it didn't affect Henrik's performances going forward. But I'm not going to name the individual that headbutted him. You'll have to figure that out.
Meanwhile, of course, our series over on the website continues. You had to be there, of course, for it to count. The most recent one, the best team that you've ever seen. This is what our writers have gone for. Quite a few, of course, the Barcelona team, who were so exceptional at the start of the decade. A couple also there for United, Juventus, Spain as well, also mentioned. Frank, for you, the best team that you ever saw.
The best thing I ever saw was the Olympique Marseille in 93 when they won the first Champions League. I was playing for Strasbourg, and they came to the stadium to play against us. It was just before, I think, a quarterfinal or semifinal of the Champions League. The atmosphere was amazing. We were losing 2-0. We finally drew against that team. But the players they had, the spirit they had, I mean, that was simply amazing to see that team fighting to finally reach what any other club got in France, is the Champions League. They're still the first and the only ones. So, yeah, they were absolutely fantastic. I was Rudy Fowler playing striker. Oh, my God. Boxish. Oh, my God. I mean, the players, Abedi Pelé in the midfield zone, Soze, they were everywhere very, very strong and very impressive team.
Craig, for you?
Well, it was that Barcelona team from the... was it the Champions League final in 2011? I think it was, Dan, was it? Yeah?
Yeah, where they beat United. Yeah.
Yeah, have I mentioned I was at the game? I might have mentioned that before. Don't know, have I?
Sam Rotines.
I was lucky enough to be commentating on the game for UEFA on the World Feed. I'll drop that in case I need another job at some point. And I've never seen anything like it, you know, because Man United were an excellent team. And that game in particular at Wembley, I've never seen a team pass the ball like that. It was incredible. You could not get near to them. And I saw Sir Alex Ferguson in after the game, not personally saw him. I saw him walking in the bowels of Wembley to the press, to face the media. And he looked shell-shocked. He looked drained and shell-shocked from what he'd just seen. Because he'd built another one of his fantastic Man United teams. And this Barca team had just completely wiped them off the park, completely outplayed them. I've never seen in my time another group of players been able to manipulate the ball like that side under Pep Guardiola.
Well, as I mentioned, a lot of people agree with you, Craig. You can check out the article in its entirety over on the website. The soap opera that is Bartomeu's reign as Barcelona president continues. The front page here talking about the fact he's still in lockdown with people that he doesn't trust, as we welcome in Sid Lowe and Ali Moreno into the show. Sid, let's start with you. I know it's difficult, but briefly, can you explain the latest installment and what's being reported regarding his presidency?
Well, let's keep it to the latest bit to try and make this as brief as possible. Essentially, he wants to reshuffle his board of directors. He believes that they didn't back him sufficiently over the last two or three crises, which, of course, were that argument with Messi over the payment of the players, the crisis over the following of online accounts. And he wants to change. But the statutes of the club do not allow him to do so. So he may well be stuck with this board if he cannot persuade people to depart on their own volition. Now, of course, he's going to keep trying, but he's not going to be able to do so. So he's stuck effectively with people that he doesn't want to be with. And this is yet another sign that he just doesn't get it right in terms of his board members, which, of course, brings up the question, which is, well, whose fault is this really? If you've had six vice presidents, if you've had four directors of communication, if you've had, I think it's four sporting directors, were they all wrong?
Let's move it on, shall we, to some good news. Ronaldinho is out of jail on bail. He is now under house arrest. Gives us a good excuse to talk about him as a player. Interesting stuff from his former teammate Xavi, saying Ronaldinho is at the level of the best. Perhaps he lacked consistency in being at his peak. Only Messi is above Ronaldinho because of the consistency in the last 2 years. Messi is the best in the history. The rest follow Ronaldinho, Ronaldo the Phenomenal, and Cristiano Ronaldo. Ali Moreno, let's talk about Ronaldinho. At his best, how close was he to Messi?
Well, Ronaldinho at his best was outstanding, was from a different world, from a different planet, and he had such a mix to his game in terms of his ability in tight spaces to be able to get past people with such ease, the enjoyment that he brought to the game, the fact that he was a finisher, and that whenever he put himself in a situation, in a position where he could finish a chance, he could do that with the best of them. But consistency did become an issue, and so the legacy of Ronaldinho cannot be just left to the side of, you know what, he was a great player, he was very skillful, he did a lot of magical things out on the field, he achieved everything there was to achieve in the game. There's also a legacy of a guy that enjoyed to party and enjoyed the nightlife and enjoyed everything that came with being Ronaldinho. You don't end up in jail in Paraguay with a fake passport if there are some difficulties in your life trying to figure out what's right and what's wrong. And so this is sort of what Ronaldinho was over the course of his career. A otherworldly talent, a magical player, a generational talent, but a guy that had some issues on the side. Now, full disclosure, when Xavi is saying what he's saying, you have to take into consideration the fact that Xavi did not coincide with Ronaldo, the original Ronaldo, Brazilian Ronaldo. That Ronaldo left in 97 and Xavi started playing with Barcelona in 98. And so he did not see the full beast that was Ronaldo in his prime. And I can tell you, having played against both Ronaldinho and Ronaldo, let me tell you, up close and personal, at his best, the best player that I ever saw up close, it was Ronaldo. And I'm talking even about Messi. I'm talking about Neymar. I'm talking about all the big players that you can think of right now. Brazilian Ronaldo, at his best, if we're in my backyard right now, in my soccer field back there, and I'm picking a team, my first choice continues to be Brazilian Ronaldo. Because for one game, at his very best, this guy was unstoppable.
If you want to party, Ronaldinho or Ronaldo, that is a good question as well. Maybe for another day, but apparently we have to stick with soccer. Sid, when he was good, how good was Ronaldinho?
Well, I mean, just unbelievable. Just genuinely, as Ali says, a generational player, a player who was different to anyone else, who had skills that nobody else had, who was kind of winding opponents up because he was so much better than them. I would take slight issue with the choice of word in terms of consistency. I don't think he was inconsistent. I think he was incredibly consistent. I think what he didn't have was longevity. So for 3 years at Barcelona, he was by far and away the best player in Spain, by far and away the best player in the world, in my opinion. I think he was better than anybody. What he didn't have, as Ali says, because of all those kind of off-field elements, those bit by bit came to catch up with him. And that meant that his time there was too short. But in the time that he was at the top of his game, he was absolutely consistent, absolutely brilliant. He was, in terms of enjoyment, in terms of fun, in terms of that kind of sense of, you know, when you watch a player, you go, what the hell did he just do? How did he do that? It's just impossible. He was the best. And yet, I'm really glad that Ali said this. And I'm tempted to go with Ali on this. Because remember that Xavi looks at Ronaldinho like that. Because Ronaldinho was the person who effectively gave new life to Barcelona. Who revived them. And Xavi knows that and is extremely grateful for that. But Xavi didn't live the original Brazilian Ronaldo at Barcelona. And that season, 96-97, I have never seen anything like it in terms of someone who is just better than everyone else by such a long way. No, he wasn't as flash. No, he wasn't as kind of crazy. He wasn't as wild. He didn't do the tricks that Ronaldinho did. But I tell you what, if Ronaldo is running through on goal, I would bet my house, your house, and Ali's house on him scoring every single time.
Meanwhile, let's talk about James Rodriguez, of course, linked to a number of clubs at the moment. Ali, you think back, it's 6 years now since that 2014 World Cup where he put in some of those PlayStation performances. I ask you, is he any good?
It's a fair question. It is, because at the club level, he hasn't been able to take that jump from what we saw in 2014 and what seemed to be the start of what was going to be a magical ride for James Rodriguez. And everything just kind of flattened out a bit. It almost seems like instead of taking a step forward, he's taking a step back. And to be quite honest with you, there's also a very clear contrast on what you see with James Rodriguez at the club level, whether that has been Real Madrid or Bayern Munich, and what you have seen with him with the national team of Colombia. With Colombia, everything revolves around James Rodriguez, and he has freedom to do as he wants, as he pleases, when he wants to, and when he pleases. That's not quite the case in these other teams that he has been a part of. And so, therefore, when he is asked to have any sort of responsibility that goes beyond having the freedom to play in the attacking half, he becomes a liability and becomes a player that simply cannot be trusted. And such is the case in the choices that Zinedine Zidane has made and some of the other coaches that he has worked with. I think James Rodriguez is still a very good player and could be a useful player under the right circumstances. And so I think about teams with wide open playing styles, teams that do not care about defending whatsoever, teams that are all about attacking. And so you start thinking about, well, Atalanta could be a great fit for him. Real Sociedad in Spain could be a good fit for him. Teams that are open and like to attack. Maybe even an Ajax in Holland. Or maybe he goes back to France and goes to Lyon or something like that. But it's not upper tier level anymore. It's a tier below that. And he's also going to have to make an adjustment in terms of what his demands would be in terms of wages, in terms of payment, because he is not at the elite level anymore. James Rodriguez is a very good player, but him and his agents and representative and whoever is talking to him have to tell him, hey, James, it's a reality check, baby. You're taking a couple of steps back, and that's the market that we're going to have to work with.
Sid, James Rodriguez.
Well, I suppose in answer to your original question, how good is he? The answer from a Spanish perspective, at least, is we don't know. because we just haven't seen enough of him. We don't know how good he can be. Well, we know how good he can be because we've seen it, but we don't know how good he is now. We don't know what kind of shape he's in. And I would go along with what Ali says. I suppose the one small kind of change I would make to some of what Ali says is talking about an open team. I think he can function in a team that's not particularly open, so long as the team is built to allow him to be the one person that doesn't do that defensive work. And I look back in particular on the season when Real Madrid won the league and the European Cup with Zinedine Zidane, and Real Madrid played their B team over the last 9 weeks of the season, particularly away from home in the domestic competition. And James was absolutely wonderful. And the thing about him is that even when he doesn't play well, and this is one of the reasons why I still think he can be useful, in every game, even when he doesn't play well, he delivers two, maybe three balls into the box, which are, as they like to say in Spain, half a goal. You know, that is an assist right there. And if you have the right kind of forward playing with him, the kind of person that feeds off that kind of in-swinging delivery, then you're going to score a lot of goals. The question is, as Ali rightly says, the decision-making, the work rate, the sense of commitment. And I guess this brings us to, exactly as Ali's talking about some of the options, is James a good player? I think in the right team and with the right manager, and Ancelotti, for example, really loves him, in the right team and the right manager, yeah, I think he probably is. But that team right now, with Zidane at least, isn't Real Madrid.
Hey, Dan, I would also say
there is something out there
in terms of an opportunity for James Rodriguez and banking into what is a great chance, a great moment, and that is David Beckham, Inter Miami. If indeed you're done with Europe and you think that, you know what, I've had enough of this, I want something different in my life, there's a lot of money to be made in Major League Soccer if James Rodriguez plays his cards right. And the appeal of James Rodriguez to the South American community in the Miami area, in particular the Colombian community in the Miami area, would be something that MLS would dream about. Now, I think it's a long shot, perhaps a little unrealistic, because the guy is still 28 years old. But if I'm Inter Miami, I'm simply, at the very least, making the phone call and reaching out and saying, James, is this something you're considering? Because if you are, we can make this work for you.
Gentlemen, thank you very much. Just a reminder, you can subscribe to our YouTube channel, ESPN FC. Plenty of content over there.
It's your home speaking, and I need you to do me a couple of favors. First, could you get that blueberry that rolled under the fridge last week? It's throwing my feng shui off. Second thing, bundle your home and car insurance with GEICO. It's easy, and we could save money. Lastly, I know you were thinking of painting the nursery back to off-white, but I'm actually feeling this baby blue. Didn't think it was my color, but I am pulling it off.
GEICO. For bundling made easy, go to geico.com today.
With thousands of locally owned Napa stores across the nation, chances are that wherever you call home, we do too. So as America starts opening back up for business, and as more of us start getting back out there again, we'll be in big cities, small towns, and everywhere in between, doing what we've always done to help keep our local communities moving forward. So whether you stop by a Napa Auto Parts store, Auto Care Center, or visit us at Napa Online, you can count on Napa know-how.
As we mentioned before, it really was a season of two halves for Mauro Icardi. Started really well at PSG, certainly tailed off. Not good numbers for this calendar year. And in fact, we were speculating about the fact that PSG weren't interested in keeping him. Reports, however, out over the last 24 hours in France are suggesting that maybe they've changed their mind. Well, Julien Laurent is back with us. Jules, any truth in this?
Yes, Dan, that's what we've been told as well at ESPN FC, that part of the reflection, it was never a complete no and that they would let him go back to Inter Milan. The reflection was always open for Leonardo, the PSG sporting director, for Thomas Tuchel as well, although we're not sure if he will be the manager next season. But for everyone at the club involved in the recruitment, it was always part of the reflection. We've seen the very good things of Mauro Icardi, and you said he started so well with all those goals, and he still has 20 in 31 matches, so a very decent ratio so far. But we also saw some more negative stuff in his attitude, maybe in how physically and fitness-wise he dipped a bit around November, December time. But I think the reflection was always open, and now it seems, from what we've been told, is that it's far more positive maybe than it could have been a few weeks ago. Maybe they looked at the market and saw that with Edinson Cavani leaving the club on a free at the end of the season, that they won't be able maybe to find anyone better than Mauro Icardi at that kind of price, so that it would be wiser to keep him at the club.
Well, Frank Leboeuf is still with us. Frank, would you keep Mauro Icardi at PSG?
Well, yes, because he, as Jules said, he had a, so far a decent season, even if we can see that he has some weaknesses, especially in the way sometimes to behave, and especially with the coach. But that he can change, that he can understand for the good of the, of the, of the squad, that he has to listen to what is being said to him. But, otherwise, he's a good striker. He's still 65 millions to put out, but, I think he can do good things for the club, especially that now we pretty much know that Cavani is not going to stay, and they need a good striker, and he is a good striker.
Jules, just quickly, I know where's Cavani going to go?
That's a big question. It seems from what his half brother and an agent is saying that there will be a lot of clubs after him in the summer. We obviously know about the Atletico Madrid link because he was so close to joining them in January. That didn't happen. I believe Atletico will still come back for him. He really wants to work with Simeone. So for me, that right now, that's the lead in the Cavani race. But you will have maybe Italian clubs. You would think clubs like Inter Milan, maybe like AC Milan, if Ibra was to leave the club. Maybe Napoli as well, if Mertens leaves the club, who will be looking for a striker like him. He could go to MLS. He could go back to South America as well, and maybe try Argentina or Brazil and clubs like that. So I think there will be a lot of things for him, because really after a poor start, he resurrected his season in the last 3 or 4 months. And I think he still has a lot to offer even at his age.
We can follow that Cavani race as it plays out over on the website. Just click on Transfer Talk. ESPN FC then back on your screens tomorrow. Be sure to join us. But for now, a big thanks to everyone who's been on today. A special thanks to Alexis Nunez and that exclusive interview with Alfonso Davies, Frank LaBeouf, Sid Lowe and Ali Moreno as well. Stay tuned, as whether you like it or not, more from Julian Laurent and Craig Burley as they answer your questions on Extra Time. Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. Thank you for your tweets. I just heard Craig Burley singing. I don't think that's ever happened before.
Well, I just heard this was the last segment we have to do. So I'm like, I started singing. I thought I'd sing to myself before the batteries in Julian's unit runs out again. And somebody has to phone me from the golf club car park.
I'm good today.
Right. Good. Thank God.
Yeah. Right. Craig, if you were still playing now, would you want to play under Klopp, Guardiola or Frank Lampard with his great potential in youth development?
Set in by Lampard himself. Mr. Frank Lampard now on Twitter. Well, we can rule out Frank, because Frank's just new to this game in terms of management. Yeah. But the other two, wow. I think it's a 50-50 split. I mean, I think the way Guardiola's teams have played over probably, what, a decade plus, and the effervescent energy of a Klopp squad and a Klopp dressing room, and just his energy in general, and it's a difficult one. I'm a 50-50 split between the pair of those. They're just two magnificent
coaches. So are you going to sit on the fence these days? What's happened to you?
What?
You're getting soft.
Well, I like them both, and contrary to popular opinion, I don't hate everybody. I'm even liking myself these days, and that's going a bit. So I'm quite happy. It's like, you know, we've got to be thankful we're here, we're doing programs, we're putting content out, and I'm not here to ruffle feathers or cause controversy. That the Craig Burley of controversial days has gone.
He's singing on the fence, he can't choose anything, he's being nice to everyone. Man,
yeah.
You're like one of those UK pundits these days, Craig. Right, next one. Yeah. Zlatan or Drogba, Jules?
I think I would go for Zlatan. I mean, I love Drogba, obviously, Growing up in France, starting his career in the lower leagues in France, and then making it the way he did. And I've got a lot of respect for the way he left Marseille when he didn't want to leave, didn't want to go to Chelsea, and then had those incredible years at Chelsea after a difficult start. So, but just Zlatan, for everything that he represented, that he represents, also the positives and the negatives, the good and the bad. Your club, whatever it was, whatever it would be, with Zlatan in, would make headlines everywhere. And I think as a club owner, for example, or even as a manager, sporting director, I think that's very attractive as well.
50-50, Craig, I imagine.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Not a doubt. And I'm just trying to morph. You know, I might have to go back to the UK one day, and I have to try and think about morphing back into a very boring, pundit who will just give you the stock answers and tell you it's a game of two halves and it'll be a difficult 45 minutes and we'll see what happens come the end. Thank you very much. Give me my paycheck. I'll see you next week. I'm working on it and we'll just have to see if this is the right strategy going forward. We are now morphing back in to the boring pundit who just wants to turn up and take his paycheck and not say a lot. Is it working? I'm enjoying it. Nobody's hitting me up on Twitter because I'm not saying anything. It's great. I love this.
You could be club ambassador at Celtic.
No, well, now you've pushed the boundaries too far, haven't you? I mean, I couldn't go back in there. They would set me on fire. They would, you know. But if you want a job working, listen, I have nothing against club TV channels. They are propagandists for their club, and I understand that. But if you want to go and hear a bit of cheerleading, then you go and you subscribe to your club channel, and they tell you everything's all right, and they'll pat you on the back and tell you you're doing a wonderful job, and you can wear the scarf, you know, and all that. I might even wear a half and half scarf now, Dan, because I'm a 50-50 kind of guy, so I might just have to be there in the old half and half. Thanks.
Jules, which World Cup winning French team is the best, 98 or 2018?
98. Oh,
that's a good one, this one.
98,
Jules,
not difficult.
Well, yeah, it is. And I'll explain to you why. That question was for me, by the way.
Not one of those garbage explanations, is it? Let me phone up and tell it to put the kettle on for a cup of tea. This answer could take a little while. Give me a shout when you're back, will you?
No, 98, I agree with Craig. 98.
Right, there we go.
Probably ages it. Because they were, they were older and certainly more, established in that team. And I think if you had to play them against each other, I think 98 would win, maybe narrowly, but I think they would.
See that, Dan? See that? That's what happens when you spend too much time with Marcotti. Because you asked the question, I'm looking at it now, it's on the screen. Which World Cup winning French team is the best, 2018 or 1998? Let's move on. No, what have we got?
No, you need to give people who are watching a bit of context, explanation, why, this and that.
Some Marcotti spiel, it's rubbing off on him. Just give an answer.
That was not as bad as Gab. That was not as bad as Gab.
Question for Craig. During his playing days, when he cursed at the referees, did they curse back?
Yes. We had this conversation quite a few weeks ago about the John Moss situation again at Bournemouth. I can't remember the player's name, but some big softy. We had this conversation that, you know, certainly in the 90s and early 2000s, when I was playing, you had a lot of dialogue with the referees. Now, some gave, we'll call it dialogue, some had dialogue back, some were more serious than others, some would have a joke, some would give you a bit of stick, you would do the same to them, and it was fun, and you kind of got a rapport, and you built an understanding, whether it be in the Premier League or in Scotland when I was playing there, about which referee you could push the buttons, which ones you could have that bit of banter, which one you had to draw the line with. But absolutely, it was something that we enjoyed. And I tell you, I think it was something that the referees enjoyed as well. So yeah, it's a natural process. Apart from the do-gooders out there who say, no, you can't shout at the referee, it's just wrong. It's very dull and boring and they've got a job to do and they can't shout back because it's 2020 and everybody gets offended. That's so, I don't know, but we did.
For the first time this week, a correct answer from Jules. Yes, indeed, it was Dan Gosling. Check out, by the way, Jules against Gab in his quiz on
YouTube.
Do you
know, Dan, when shut up a minute. When Jules is talking, and I know this is a technical issue for another time, but when I'm talking and Jules is talking, maybe this is not a bad thing, but I can't hear him. So I've got no idea what he's saying unless I shut up and listen, which, as you know, is quite difficult for me to do sometimes. But just so as you understand, I'm not ignoring anybody, but when I'm talking, I can't hear other people talking. It's a technicality. You need to fix it. Otherwise, tomorrow could be a problem. That's all I'm saying. I'm just here to help.
Good. Right. Good. Jules, I have Paolo Maldini and Baresi. Who do I pick between Sergio Ramos and Beckenbauer for my final centre-back?
Who are you asking?
Me. Jules.
All right.
So Sergio Ramos or Beckenbauer?
Yes.
Oh, come on. That's, who asked the question? That's not even a question. Come on. Even Craig Birdie 50-50 on the fence would give a 100% answer on that.
Yeah.
Beckenbauer every day. It's not even a debate.
Okay. Final. Well, we got two more left. First one.
Good.
Champions League favourites if the season continues. Craig?
Can I go 50-50?
Oh,
if the season finishes, Liverpool were starting to tail off a little bit, so we don't know what's going to happen there. I'm going to say...
What happened to just giving an answer? Just give an answer. That's okay, it, you're Shannon Jules.
Yeah, because an answer. Why are you giving an answer? Marcotti, come on, that buddy.
Listen, you're going to get an explanation now, Jules. Because it will give players time to get fit, particularly your French compatriot, Aymeric Laporte, I'm going to say Manchester City.
Jules?
PSG. I believe. Oh. I dream. This is our year.
Oh.
Favourite.
Oh, no. No.
What did I tell you?
Final tweet, Jules.
No. What did I tell you about getting pundits off of the PSG club channel? What did I tell you?
I don't care.
Final tweet. Why does it say once upon a time behind you?
This is the reading corner for my three children in my office upstairs in our house.
Oh.
So before you all laugh at me, like Dan did when he asked me the same question a few weeks ago, like, oh, what is this? And, you know, calling me, oh, that's so posh, that's so this. Yeah, it's just the kids can come and read while I'm doing some work. And, you know, this is a good thing. This is a cool thing. Come on.
It's a beautiful thing, Jules. It's quite posh.
Thank you.
I have to say, I've worked pretty hard at my backdrop, and there's not a lot of effort seems to have gone in there in London. I got to say, these bricks behind me.
Oh my God!
I laid those bricks myself over the last 36 hours, and put that white thing you can see on. That's a lot of work
in your basement or in the room upstairs that was not suited and not good, and now you're at the bottom and it's much better, and you've got this, but still some stuff still not working completely.
No, everything's working properly. It's the backdrop, apparently, and the TV upstairs didn't look great. And so they've moved me into my basement where I've kind of adapted everything, my technical skills, and I've used all sorts of different technology to bring you this here today. And, you know, a bit of brickwork over the last couple of days, fixing the camera, the Wi-Fi. Unfortunately, I'm still working on the wire.
Cares. That's it. Thank you very much to Craig and Jules. We'll be back tomorrow for more from our pundits from around the globe. Be sure to join us. Till then, goodbye.